everyone. Nick Filato here to talk about an excellent podcast on the Blue Wire Network called Tight End One. The podcast is hosted by three-time Pro Bowl tight end Greg Olsen, Jersey native, great guy, and a current Seattle Seahawk. Olsen discusses the nuance of being an NFL player. He also goes into detail about the tight end position, along with a ton of knowledge and stories about the NFL. Ever wonder what it's like being great at sports at a professional level, but you just might not have it in you? Yeah, I struggle with that as well. Luckily for us, Greg is here to help us understand the reality of that pipe dream. An episode with Kansas City Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce is about to drop on the feed, so be sure to tune into that as well. But for now, please enjoy this episode of Tight End One on our feed here on Big Blue Banter.
TE1 is brought to you by the strongest, most advanced Chevy Silverado ever. This truck is all about grit, strength, and dependability. The same attributes it takes to be a tight end. And just like the incredible tight ends we sit down with on my new show, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Before we kick off the show, I want to tell you that this season, NFL Sunday Ticket is elevating their game. Let's say you live in Charlotte and you're curious to see if this old guy like me has any gas in the tank out in Seattle with the Seahawks. NFLSundayTicket.tv lets you stream all the live, out-of-market NFL games every Sunday, so you never miss your favorite teams or your favorite players, like me. Gone are the days of needing a satellite on your roof to enjoy every snap on Sunday. This year, you can enjoy every game all on your favorite devices. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and promo code GREG88. I'm Greg Olsen, and this is TE1, the podcast where we explore the evolution of the tight end position through conversations with some of the best players of all time. Hey, everybody, what's up? Welcome back to TE1. I'm your host, Greg Olsen, and today I'm going to be talking to Travis Kelce, the first-team All-Pro, Pro Bowl, and most recently the 2019-20 Super Bowl champ of the Kansas City Chiefs. Travis Kelce has taken production and stats for the tight end position to a level I'm not sure anyone ever imagined possible. On the heels of guys like Tony Gonzalez and Shannon Sharp, I mean, he's on pace to catch records that people at one time thought were unreachable. And to be able to sit down and hear his perspective and hear his background and the influence that it had on him and shaping him as a player, some of his trials, some of his struggles, both in growing up as a kid and his background, but also at the college level, and you know, people questioning whether or not he had the makeup to make this, to go along with his incredible physical skills, that he had the, you know, the mental approach and the discipline to become the player that he obviously has become. And he's answered that more than adequately over the last couple of years with just who he is as a person. And of course, his production and career stands out for itself. And then some of the relationships he's built with Andy Reid and the impact that he's had. He talks about meeting Andy when he coached his brother Jason for the Eagles when he was in college, and lo and behold, he ends up playing for Andy and winning a Super Bowl with him this past season. I had to bring up that he broke my record. He is the first guy in NFL history to have four consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. And then, as most conversations go that involve anyone with the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, their MVP quarterback, Pat Mahomes, who in a very short period of time has been the MVP and now Super Bowl champion and has really taken the league by storm and has kind of revolutionized the quarterback position. And here is my conversation with Travis Kelce. Just a heads up, this conversation was recorded before Travis signed his new extension with the Chiefs. What's up, man?
Man, you know what? Just enjoying the offseason, I guess.
Where are you at? Where are you?
I'm in Kansas City. Good old KCMO.
Nice.
Not the KCK. KCMO. Big difference out here.
A huge differentiation. If you mess that up, that's embarrassing. How many guys, though, come there and don't know which state they're in?
I'm one of them. I thought I was going to Kansas. I actually when I got the call from Andy Reid on draft day, I got a Missouri number, and I'm thinking the only thing in Missouri I know is St. Louis. I'm just like, kidding me? St. Louis? I mean, shout out to Fisher and everybody over there.
Obviously, at the time, obviously.
It just wasn't for me. But Andy Reid, man, can't be mad.
I think it's all worked out, and we are going to dive into all of that and more And but first and foremost, thank you for agreeing to do this. This obviously is a real treat. You are the first guy that I've interviewed who came into the league after me. So I'm actually super excited now to get into a more contemporary era of tight ends. I want to go back to, you know, growing up in Ohio, having a big brother that you wanted to be like, following him to college. But first, just talk to me about what it was like. I know you've talked a lot about your father instilling that discipline in you guys as a steel worker, showing you what real work was.
Exactly, yeah.
And so just take us back a little bit. Give us some perspective on where you came from, what your early childhood was like, and what impact that's had on who you are and also who you are as a football player.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, so I come from Northeast Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, Cleveland Heights to be specific. And growing up, I originally grew up my first 5 years of living on this earth. I was in North Ridgeville, Ohio, which is still in Northeast Ohio area, so it's on the west side, but completely different dynamic in terms of ethnicity, social class from where I ended up in Cleveland Heights, which I think is one of the most beautiful places on earth. So it was a very unique atmosphere growing up in the Heights. And me and my brother both got that. And we got it from a lot of different angles because we love sports so much. So, I mean, you talk about it. I mean, everything from soccer, hockey, baseball, basketball, lacrosse, got into football once middle school, high school came around, always had a racket for tennis. You know what I mean? Just the backyard was a complete sports complex, which I'm sure is not very different than a lot of the brothers out here in the world. But, I mean, that's all we did. We competed at every single sport we could possibly compete at. And then it trickled into the video game world. And then it trickled into the playing cards while we're eating dinner. You know, everything was a competition. And what that did was it just built up, one, a relationship that, you know, I was so appreciative of as a kid, to know that I had a bigger brother always kind of just making sure that I'm doing the right things and I'm always getting the upper hand on, you know, the guys when I play in my age groups and stuff. So it's just it was a very cool upbringing.
Yeah, I grew up in the Northeast. I grew up outside of New York City in like a typical New York suburb. Both my parents were school teachers. We were kind of middle America, middle class. We had a nice upbringing. You know, we didn't want for a lot. We weren't rich by any means off teacher salaries. My dad was a football coach. But my dad, you know, grew up in some more humble beginnings. And anytime he felt that we were kind of losing perspective a little bit, he would put us in the car and he would drive us up to a little bit more north in North Jersey and take us to his old trailer. And it wasn't a trailer park. It was a single trailer with an outhouse in the middle of the woods. And since, you know, I don't know what's happened to it since then, but, you know, 30 years after he lived there, it had been knocked over and weeds were growing. And, you know, it just gave a great dose of reality. And from that experience growing up in middle America, middle class America, to then, you know, you talk about football and sports in general, really just expanding our horizons. Mm-hmm. I go down to University of Miami. Kids from all over the country, but, you know, predominantly kids from South Miami, South Florida, just being exposed to different cultures. And people ask me all the time, you know, what was Miami like? The football was great and all that.
What was it like, G-Reg?
It was very good. We had a lot of fun. We can touch on that here in a second. This is an open forum.
I love it.
But when people ask me, the best part about it was just being around the guys and being around guys that lived very different lives than I had up until that point, and just really developing friendships and developing appreciation for their backgrounds and their stories and their personal lives. And these are guys that I'm still talk to and are friendly with to this day. And, you know, if it wasn't for football, I don't know if I would have ever gotten out of my bubble. I don't know if I would have ever seen anything outside of Northern New Jersey. And I'm thankful for that. And I'm thankful, obviously, for the last 14 years of being around some of the most, you know, insightful, intelligent guys from all walks of life. And like you said, those locker room moments, that's what makes it. At the end of the day, that's what we'll remember. Those are the things that I was excited to come back in year 14. You know, and I look forward to developing those new friendships out in Seattle. So let's go back. So you talked about you're a three sport, you're playing everything, three sports star, but there's a lot of people who think you could have been a better, if it wasn't for your father, he was really the one who talked you into playing football at the next level, right? You wanted to play basketball, baseball. Football was not really at the top of your list.
It wasn't. It was honestly, I think it was something that my brother locked in on and he ran with it. And I was just kind of sitting there like, well, yeah, I mean, I see how dominant he is. You know, let's give it a try. I got out there, had some fun, had some success. But my real love was always basketball, and baseball was the one that my father was really like, yeah, you know what? I mean, it was always my dad's dream. Get the swing the bat.
It's not a bad way to make a living.
It's very cool to think that maybe I could have done another sport, but at the end of the day, I'm glad I chose football, man. It's opened up so many doors for me, so many fun experiences, meeting guys like Greg Olsen.
Yeah, right. So you talk a lot about your brother. So your brother Jason obviously is a all-pro, one of the best centers in the game, Super Bowl champ.
Stud.
He's just an all-around stud. I'll tell you what. We down at the Pro Bowl, humble brag. I was at the Pro Bowl with your brother, and we had the best time. Like, that dude on the bus telling stories, just kind of shooting the shit. Dude, we had such a good time. I remember when me and you used to be around each other at Pro Bowls, and then the last couple years, I haven't exactly held up my end of the bargain, but the Kelsey brothers are pretty much always there. But now he played tight end. He's a center now, but he played tight end.
Oh, yeah.
But you were not a tight end.
So he was a backer. He was a linebacker. He played a little running back, H-back type thing. He's just all around athlete trying to find his way on the field.
You can tell when he plays center. The guy is unbelievably fast.
He gets it, man. He averaged nine yards a pop on handoffs.
Well, who's tackling him?
I don't know.
So let me tell you. So I've talked to some of the greatest tight ends who have ever played in the last couple weeks. None of them played tight end when they were kids. And obviously you're no different. You were a quarterback. Really, up until your first couple years in college,
yeah,
nobody ever dreams about being a tight end. We kind of all just sort of end up tight ends by default.
It's crazy, yeah.
But you were a big time quarterback, Division I quarterback. Went to University of Cincinnati as a quarterback. Was that entire process of recruiting always driven with the idea of being a quarterback, or did some schools say, no, we have other plans for you? Like, how did that whole thing play out?
Yeah, I feel like the majority of my offers were athlete. And as I talked to most of the college coaches, and this is similar for a lot of guys. It's not a very unique story by any means, because a lot of guys will go think, and the coaches will sit there and say, yeah, he wants to play cornerback, but yeah, he might be a better wide receiver, or vice versa. I was a quarterback, but I never threw the ball in high school. I was always just, you know what, I can get these 5 yards and just 5 yard them all the way down. I was a runner. So I just never developed the understanding of looking downfield at coverages and stuff like that through high school or my first couple of years at Cincinnati. So when I got to Cincinnati, it was just a wildcat. Well, once the wildcat became something, was, well, how do we get them on the field so that when we catch a team in our up-tempo stuff, we can just throw them into wildcat and they'll be stuck in a certain personnel or something like that. Getting real football talky here.
Love it. Give it to them.
And so they came out with this wildcat, and I started to transition into doing some tight end stuff. And that was my second year in college. And from that point on, we went to the Sugar Bowl, had a great year, great run for the Bearcats. Shout out to UC, baby. And you know what? The transition was there. It was over. I was like, you know what? I'm kind of enjoying this tight end a little bit more than the quarterback. The quarterback, I don't want to get into the scrutiny and all that stuff, but I think that there is a certain level of professionalism that you have to demand as a quarterback for your team, for your, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying I'm not a professional by any means.
I just think that is the best that is the best self-awareness comment I've ever heard. I think
you gotta know yourself, man.
And watching, oh my God, knowing you and getting to know you over the years, that self-awareness right there, I applaud you. And that is amazing.
It was a little too much in my mind. I mean, I still have the hopes of the dreams that one day, you know, I just might get to run a 2-minute drill somewhere. Well, but
I mean, we're going to fast forward a little bit and then we'll go back. I mean, in the NFL, we've seen you on third down line up in the shotgun. We've seen you hand the ball off zone read. We've seen you pull it and run I don't think we've seen you pull it and throw it, right?
One time.
Have you thrown it?
One time, a little fake bubble screen.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so, great story. We're playing against the Giants, and as Coach Reed's installing this play, it's basically spread the defense out, throw a bubble screen to me. I act like I'm running it, and then throw it down the middle of the Tyreek. Big cover 2 team. We were hoping we'd get the safeties bite a little bit. And the safeties didn't bite at all. They didn't believe on the bubble screen at all. So they just they doubled Tyreek. Well, for whatever reason, I'm not going to say he did this on purpose, but for whatever reason, on the drawing, on the install, it's got a backside post. Why would it be there if he didn't give me a progress? If he didn't want me to progress,
it's live.
You know what I mean? Go through my progression. And it's just, you know what? I always dream big. I dream big. I'm like, all right, if I get this thing, Tyreek's not open, just peek. Just peek over. And sure enough, I peek over. DeMarcus Robinson's scot-free, just rolling down the other hash or other numbers. And I give it a good crow hop, a little base outfield, a little crow hop, and chuck it about 50 yards, 60 yards downfield. And got picked.
Well, we can leave that safety part. Yeah. The rest of the story was money.
When I tell you I was a big league QB, Greg, I'm talking about I'd made it. I made it.
Buddy, can you imagine how legendary that would have been?
Man, coach.
They don't throw me bubble screens. So like you and Kittle, like all you guys that are so like crafty after the catch. I always did like 95% of my work before I got the ball. Okay. And then after I caught the ball, it was just like survive. So they don't throw me bubble screens. So I can only imagine how exciting that must be to catch a bubble screen tight end.
You get the numbers. Anybody can run a bubble screen now. We've thrown them to the fullbacks and everything like that. You can get a good bubble screen. You catch the numbers on one of these run pass options.
That's true. We're going to do some of that in Seattle. We did a lot of it with Cam, we're going to do more with Russ now. So, well, that's a good story. And now people know that this isn't just by accident. Andy Reid's not just laying up at night saying, I might put Travis Kelce at quarterback. That's what you were in high school, and that's what you were your first couple years and the story I've heard, and you can confirm or deny. So Tony Pike was a very brief teammate of mine. So I got traded to Carolina in 2011, and you were like 7 years old. So
I was just making the transition. You were on my wall in my dorm room.
We're going to talk about that. Hold that thought. So 2011, I got traded to Carolina. And the rule then was, because we were in the lockout, if you got a new contract, you were not eligible to practice for the first 5 days of training camp. It was amazing. I highly recommend it. Wow. So there was like 15 of us who weren't allowed to practice for whatever the reason. And Tony Pike was one of them. He had just gotten signed by the Panthers. So the poor guy, and every time I hear his name, this is the story I think of. Drag him out on the practice field before we would go out there and make him and we would throw balls and work out. And the poor guy one day, after a couple days, threw a ball, and the poor guy tore something in his shoulder and never played again. And for that whole preseason,
that's
everybody was like,
"The story behind it?
Like,
that's
nuts. You ruined Tony Pike's career." And I'm like, I felt so bad. The poor guy, it was just throwing balls on air.
You can't blame that on you.
He beat you out. If you beat him out, are you the tight end you are today?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm breaking records behind in the pocket, man. Honestly, I think I had a cannon.
So all Chief fans out there need to take a minute to thank Tony Pike
TP
for beating you out for the starting quarterback at the University of Cincinnati, or else you are not Pro Bowl All Pro Travis Kelce.
And what's funny that you say that is that he was the big pocket passer. I was the wildcat. I was the runner. I came in for him. We were like a little dual threat combo there. He slowly just transitioned me. Him and Zach Kolaris, another Big East goon, just won the Grey Cup up in Canada. Shout out to Zach Kolaris. Got a lot of shout outs today.
Buddy, you're killing the shout out game. Keep it going. This is your forum. Whoever you want to shout out, whoever you want to touch on, this is your canvas, buddy. Go and paint.
I put on way too much deodorant. Shout out to Old Spice. I'm breathing in the fumes of my deodorant.
Well, you're wearing, I wish people could see you. They're not going to see you, but I can see you.
You want to see my dress?
That tank top is unbelievable.
It was hot out today, man. It's getting hot out here in Kansas City, man. It's been raining a lot the past couple of weeks, and I feel like that humidity is just rising on you.
Brutal.
You get about 10 routes in, and you're like, whoa.
I feel like I almost died today. So back to the conversation. I'm going to try to keep it on track. So coming out of high school, I had an older brother who was one grade ahead of me, played quarterback, and went to the University of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. In my heart, I wanted to go to Miami. I wanted to do, you know, similar to like you touched on, I wanted to go play with my big brother. We had always played together through high school growing up. I originally signed with the University of Notre Dame, went there for a summer, and shortly after that realized we had to go our separate ways. He went to Virginia. I transferred and obviously finished my career at Miami. You also took the path where you had a lot of other options, a lot of other schools who wanted you, but you also said, you know, I'm going to go play. You know, Jason was at Cincinnati, you know, a few years older than you. Take us through that process. Like, how important was it for you, your family? Because I know firsthand, there's a lot of pressure to follow in the footsteps for the family.
It gives your family one spot to go to see both the boys, or, you know what I mean, to go see both of us. You know, it gives one team for everyone to cheer for. It's just and on top of that, it gives me somebody I can relate to out here in the world. You know, going to a new school, I don't know which. I mean, I was I'm a happy-go-lucky guy. I don't know what crowd I would have caught on to without my brother being, you know what I mean, the kind of the driver in all of that. You know, I wanted to spend every freaking minute with my brother in college. So it was the fact that my brother was going there, the fact that I got a chance to play QB, and the fact that they were going to let me dual sport it and play basketball.
All right.
And that was, I mean, the Big East back in 2007, 2008. I mean, that's the Kemba Walkers. It was still rocking in the Big East. Not that it's not anymore. Nova and everybody's still in it. But in terms of the Big East Madison Square Garden tournament, I grew up wanting to play in that tournament. And I had my chance. Now, I had a lot of fun, and I got my chance taken away. But you learn from your mistakes. And you figure out exactly what you want to do in life. And you know what? It was a blessing, because what it made me do is it made me focus on my craft. And once I got the understanding of routine and getting better, and you know what I mean, just really putting in meaningful work at my craft, at my position, at my art form, everything started taking off for me. I started having a boatload of success. And you know what? We started winning some football games and having some more fun on the field.
Well, you took the conversation exactly where I was going to go. Yeah. You referred to it quickly before. We've all had our moments in college that we look back on and we're not proud of. But I do think that sometimes in our most difficult times, I know I look back to some of my both on and off the field struggles of my whole career, have really allowed me to grow to who I am, understand discipline, routine, process. Oh, yeah. Performance, attitude. I mean, there's a million components to it.
Perseverance.
So, you bounce back now. So now you're going into your senior year, which was really your kind of come onto the scene moment, right?
For
700 plus yards, 8 touchdowns, really became a guy on the national landscape for NFL teams to really say, all right, this guy, you know, he's had his history, but this guy can play. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's led to where we are today. But what did you learn through those struggles, those first couple years, about who you were, what you wanted to be, the process that it was going to take, the discipline it was going to take, and how have you carried that forward to have the success now you've had 10 years later?
Yeah, I had a very, very great position coach at the University of Cincinnati, Zach Johnson. And Coach J was unbelievable.
Shout out. Give him a shout out.
Shout out Coach J, baby. Let's go.
There you go.
He's unbelievable. He's I believe, originally an O-line coach. But he came on to us, and he was helping me out with just understanding the physics of football. Just like you have a center of core, you have a core in your body, and you have to find that balance and that strength when you're trying to move objects. You want to lift under people, pick them off the ground in a sense, and then start to drive your legs. And the way he started to describe everything, It was all clicking for me. It was all making sense. And I had the determination of, this is my last year. Like I'm a scrub. I got it to this point where I at least have a chance. And you know what? An opportunity is all I need at this point, because I got to take advantage of it. And I was very fortunate that, you know what I mean, I had Coach Johnson there to be able to direct, like give that discipline and that mental want. You know what I mean? Want to succeed and want to do better for myself. And he was right there pushing me both mentally and physically to the max, man. And I love him for it.
So obviously after that senior season, you're kind of on the map. You've kind of put all that raw talent that people saw in you since you were in high school. It kind of all came together. And now it's time to see, can I make a career of this? Can I take this to the next level? And a story that I just found super relatable and really interesting. So Ozzie Newsome, the general manager of the Baltimore Ravens.
I only got one Ozzie Newsome story, so it's it.
All right, I'll let you tell it, and maybe hopefully it's the same one I have.
I'll tell you what, I look back on it. So I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. Ozzie Newsome, obviously, Hall of Fame Brown.
Yep.
Hall of Famer all around. Just you hear nothing but praise when you hear Ozzie Newsome, especially around Cleveland or the Baltimore area. And it was just a very my uncle when I was a kid and he was playing for him, he got a picture signed by Ozzie Newsome to the Kelce Boys. And I'm sure my dad has it at the house.
That's
somewhere.
Cool.
And we were kids, and I'm like, I barely got to see the guy play, right? So I was born in 89, but like they knew like who Ozzie was. He was a Hall of Famer. So they knew that, you know, the boys would probably appreciate this at some point in time. Well, 20 some years down the line, here I am interviewing for a job for the Baltimore Ravens during the combine. And I walk into the room, just had an unbelievably cool conversation with Harbaugh. He was talking about how he had some roots up in Cleveland. And I walk in on my high horse just thinking, man, this thing's going great so far. I get to meet the guy that, you know what I mean, I've wanted to meet since I was a kid. And I walk in, big smiles, go to shake his hand. He shakes my hand. Hey, sit down. I was like, oh, what'd I do? I felt like I was in the principal's office, man. I sit down. He starts to play some film. And there might have been a little bit of hello, like a little bit more conversation than this, but as I remember it, this is all I remember.
All that matters is how you remember.
He pressed play. And we started going over all of my personal misconducts, like all my just flags because of bad attitude and uncontrollable. And he pauses and he looks at me and said, "Son, are you an asshole?" I looked. I was like, I mean, on the field, yeah, I play with a certain aggression, but I'm one of the nicest guys you'll ever, like, I'm very respectful. I treat everyone with the same respect I want to be treated with. Like, and I'm just trying to like sell them at this point. I'm like, you threw my bluff.
You're just scrambling. Well, your story is exactly the story I was hoping you were going to share, because yeah. I just found that unbelievable. Too bad you couldn't have gone and played for him. I'm sure he probably regrets not drafting you.
He had a great point. Okay. I didn't leave the room like, man, that was the worst ever. Why would he treat me like I left the room? Yeah, like, I guess guy had a point. He had a point, man.
He's on to something.
I got to fix that.
My combine memory, really the only memory I have of the combine. Fortunately, he didn't call me an asshole, but it was not a great
experience. He didn't call me when he just asked if I was.
That's true. That's fair. That's a good distinction. That's on me. So I walk into the Jets. So at the time, Mangini's the head coach. So I walk in, and you know, we're walking in. You feel like you're the king shit. You're shaking hands and kissing babies. So there's nice. there's 25 guys in this room, right? Uh-huh. And you have a 10-minute conversation. For anybody who hasn't been to the combine, obviously, you go from like room to room. It's like speed dating, and you meet everybody. So I walk in and I shake his hand. He introduces himself, and I go around and shake 20 people's hands, and I sit down. He grabs the clicker of the remote to play video, just like you said, and he goes, "What's his name?" And it was like some random guy. I'm like, "I don't know, sir." He's like, "What's his name?" "I don't know." He went like five or six people, and I didn't have a clue. And he goes, "What's my name?" I said, "Oh, you're Coach Mangini." He goes, "You don't really, not much paying attention for detail, huh?" He could have put on me scoring 25 touchdowns on that film. It didn't matter. I was broken. I walked out of that room in a sweat, and I was like, there's no chance in hell the Jets draft me. Man. They did not draft me. They drafted Darrell Revis. Goes to show how much they know. But buddy, once something like that happens, you're done. There's no
mentally, you are in, you're under you're in, the table. I feel like during the draft, like, these guys have a secret, like, it's kind of pleasuring for them to see guys just start squirming in their seat, like,
no question.
Like, who's going to handle the pressure here?
It's exhausting. Well, we t- take comfort to know we've all had one of those moments. But yours is the best. There's something about a Hall of Fame tight end GM. Now looking back on hindsight, and now that it's you and you've had the career, and you're probably going to break every record he ever had.
Oh, man.
We're going to take a quick break, so make sure you stay tuned for more from TE1. TE1 is brought to you by the strongest, most advanced Chevy Silverado ever. On TE1, we set out to discover what makes a top tight end and what it takes to be the best. One thing that I have learned is to be on top, you've got to work harder and be willing to advance and adapt your game. That forward thinking is what has helped Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and all the other amazing tight ends that I've interviewed be ahead of the game. These guys are strong, they're dependable. They come through when most people would give up. It takes grit, determination, and these legends aren't afraid to get their hands dirty. These characteristics translate from the field to everyday life. We all strive to be strong and dependable. This is the foundation of what Silverado is. Just like these incredible tight ends, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Another quick reminder that this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv lets you stream all the live, out-of-market NFL games every Sunday, so you never miss a snap from tight ends like me, Travis Kelce, or George Kittle. Gone are the days of needing a satellite on your roof to enjoy every snap on Sundays. This year, you can enjoy every game on all your favorite devices. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88. At checkout, you will get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. All right, so let's fast forward. So obviously, you do not get taken by the Baltimore Ravens. You get drafted by the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Yep. Third round pick, 2013. Andy Reid is just coming in. Andy Reid has talked a lot in the past, especially leading up to the Super Bowl and even before that, about how he had a lot of confidence in you because he got to know you when your brother was in Philly with him. So when you would go around, when you would go visit your brother, like, were you meeting Andy Reid at practice? Were you around the facility? Like, what was that relationship with Andy Reid before he was your coach?
I think it was as I started meeting everybody around the facility, just being the little brother in the facility, I everyone just started kind of letting Andy know, like, yeah, he's not, yeah, he's a good dude. He's a good dude. Yeah. He's got a little temper problem on the field, but he's a good dude. Good dude. And then I finally got to meet him because his son played at Temple.
Okay.
So when Temple would join the Big East my senior year, we played actually at Lincoln Financial.
Right. Yeah.
So as we're playing, I'm going to say goodbye to my brother in the tunnel, and he introduces me to Coach Reid, and I'm like starstruck at this point. I'm like, the walrus, oh shit, it's Andy Reid. So I shake his hand, we start talking about football a little bit, and after that it was I didn't hear from him at all, like during like the combine and anything like that. So it was, I guess we had one of the meetings that you just were mentioning. Nothing drastic. Just wanted to know general football stuff. But being able to be under Coach Reid has been such a blessing. And I mean, he started off he's an offensive guru, and he started off at Green Bay, I believe, in the tight end room. At one point in time, he definitely was the tight ends coach. Then he went to QB coach, and then he went on from there to end up getting the head coaching job in Philly. But he's had so much to do with the progression of like how mentally, like how mentally strong you have to be at the tight end position. The first thing he said, I need you every single play. I need you out there. I need you, like, this is, he demanded like certain things that have done so much for my career to be able to get the snaps, to be able to grow as a player. And the fact that he has that offensive mind, the old BYU, you know what I mean? Right guard coming through the lane on power, you know, just that old school mentality. It's one up front. He demands that toughness out of all of his players. And I've been fortunate, I mean, not only to learn mentally from everything he installs. I mean, I'm listening to when he's installing plays for the running backs, the wide receivers. You know, you never know with Coach Reid. He puts guys everywhere. So I just so grateful to be able to grow under his offense and play for his team, man.
Yeah, when you guys come in for a Wednesday, you know, so Wednesday's like the first big first and second down. For those listening, Wednesday, you have Monday, you come in, watch tape from the game before. Tuesday, we'll have off. And then Wednesday is really the first big install, especially with the passing game. So, like, when you come in and you sit in that first meeting in the morning, like, is there an excitement level that this week there could be something brand new?
Oh,
like, you never know what you're going to be asked to do. That's got to be super exciting. And for a guy like Andy Reid, who's kind of that, has that reputation of he's just going to draw stuff on the board, he's going to kind of spitball until he kind of formulates his game plan, to be one of his main weapons, that's got to be super exciting coming in and saying, I wonder what they have in store, man, this week.
Like I said, I've been so fortunate. I mean, he's put a lot of trust in a lot of guys on the team, but I'm not saying any more than myself, but I mean, I'm just thankful for how much trust he's given me in this offense to be able to run these kind of routes that typically aren't ran by, you know, tight ends.
Yep.
Split out. And on the flip side, I have a lot to appreciate for Andy Heck. Not as much Andy Reid, but Andy Heck's the run game coordinator. And I mean, him and Eric Bieniemy, in terms of making sure that the strength of the run game matches the strengths of the blockers, the people around them, splitting it out, knowing that I'm split out, running a lot more routes out there. Splitting me out isn't just an indicator to pass. Now it's an indicator to, oh, they might run it or run the pass option out of it. So just being able to understand creatively where the coaches are going with it, you can get excited every single week about that.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if they're dialing up stuff to where you're putting up crazy numbers every week, you know? Oh, man,
There's nothing better than like being in that role where you just know, and each week it's like, give me more, challenge me more. What else can we do? And you're watching other guys, you're stealing stuff. I had a routine every Thursday. I would put on back in the day, Gonzalez, Witten, you know, the guys that were the most productive that week. I would be like, all right, I'm going to go back. So every Thursday before I'd leave the facility, I'd go back and look, and, you know, and then the next day you're like begging the coach, like, we need to run like that. And then sometimes they're honest and you're like, well, Kelsey runs that route really good. You ain't running that. And I'm like, you're right.
Stop.
You're right. No, I'm being serious. But like, I would try to scavenge the whole thing. And our coaches were really open-minded. When we were rolling, they had a lot of trust in Cam and I that we would kind of have some freestyle ability and whatnot. But I remember when we were rolling those best years and when I had my best years, Wednesday's install was like my favorite day of the week. Because you knew a big part of it was going to be for you.
For sure.
First and second down. And then, you know, obviously on third, we'd get a lot too. But, you know, you knew that a big part of the offense was going to run through you. It was just a matter of how they were going to do it this week.
Get your cup of Joe, put your seatbelt on and get pumped up.
See what happens.
It's fun. It's fun. Especially in the, the passing game has evolved so much just in terms of having big guys singled up. Yep. Whenever, I mean, we got crazy weapons. So whenever he's dialing up plays for these, the front side, whenever I'm singled up on the backside, that where I'm kind of like on the backside, check down maybe or something like that. I'm just like, just throw a little option on the back there, Andy, you know, just throw a little. I mean, heck, he's going to be coming back to me with almost a sense of urgency anyways. Might as well, you know, have a throw for him, not just run around. I'm a big time backside of the route. Oh, I'm just throw a little option on the backside there.
I love being backside by myself. I want everyone else to get out of the way. I hate when guys are in the way and all that. Just you guys go on that side. You run your three-man concept, and I'll be back here by myself. Just don't send anybody over here. Man. Now, when you bring that to him, is he pretty receptive? Like, you've probably earned his trust that now.
I don't think it's ever, like, really, like, it's never, like, changed that week.
Okay.
Like, it might go down the road. He might, let's give it a try right here.
But you know, he's like, I got this. I'll make the plays. You run the routes.
Yeah, I don't.
I think that's probably
at him too much.
I think that's probably fair.
Yeah,
I think his track record is pretty good. So 2013, not your bad rookie year. I know you had a knee injury, kind of were slow out of the gates, and then 2014 and beyond, you arguably had the greatest stretch of tight end production in NFL history. I mean, starting at 14, and before we dive into that, because I have a trivia question for you, but before we get into that, Alex Smith.
Smitty.
So you play four of your, you know, four all pro level years with Alex Smith. and it's set, you know, 17, they draft Mahomes, but Smith still, Alex still plays.
Has his best year.
Has his best year. So here you are probably saying, all right, you know, the young kid who obviously we'll touch on here in a second, but you know, the young kid's going to have to wait his turn, maybe an Aaron Rodgers type feel, maybe wait a couple years for Alex to roll out the rest of his career. But sure enough, after year one, 2017, they trade him to Washington. What was the reaction, yourself, the guys who had really had tremendous success with Alex? Like, what was that reaction? Did you have trust that Andy knew what he was doing? Did you have trust that you saw Patrick as a rookie and said, this kid is special? Or was there still some level of disappointment that your dude just got sent, sent shopping?
And it was, and I think, I don't know. I think a little bit has to do with it being, you know, you have so much appreciation for a guy that does it right every single day, every single time. He's never, you know, he's always in it for the team. And that's what Alex was. He was the ultimate leader, ultimate competitor. And you just appreciated that so much. You wanted to win one for him. You know what I mean? There was a little bit of doubter saying he didn't have it to win it. I'm like, man, that's bull crap. I've seen way worse QBs win it. And I know Alex Smith can lead this team to a championship. And, man, there was some plays here and there in the playoffs where I was like, man, we were a couple plays away from really giving ourselves a chance. But, I mean, I where it really ripped me was that I just never, you know, got there with him. You know, so that story is closed. Yeah. And that one sucks. But I mean, you had full trust in Coach Reed and the young gun, man. I mean, Pat showed so much in practice during the season. You name it, man. He was in there throwing stuff around, and everybody was in awe throughout the entire practice squad and everything throughout the season. So
as a rookie, so I want to dive into that because I think that's interesting. So as a rookie, Alex is obviously the starter, and it was clear from day one that Alex was going to be the guy. So Patrick's running the scout team each week. He's simulating the other team's offense, their quarterback. So did you guys find yourself after a couple weeks, like, you know, usually when the defense is on, the offense, at least on the teams I've been, is kind of off on the side, not really paying attention. Like, did you find yourself being like, this guy is different? Like, there's something special about this kid, and find yourself now you're watching the scout team
every
offense?
Single time. Yeah.
I bet.
Every single time. And it was fun because what Pat would do is Pat would literally have fun and see what he could get away with back there. It was just like he was just back there nonchalant. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's still professional.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like he was out there pissing the coaches off or anything. Right. He was just making so many incredible throws that it just turned into primetime scout team.
Yeah.
And I mean, guys say it all the time. I saw him literally roll out and huck one on the run at least 75, 80 yards. And when he did that, I mean, it's like the first or second play of a 2-minute drill. You know what I mean? We start back at the 20, and he's just rolling out and just hucks it, touchdown, 2 minutes over, drives over. And I was just like, this dude can wing it anywhere at any time.
And I think it's important for people listening, the context of that. So when you're running scout team quarterback, they're literally, the coach is just holding up a card with like diagrams. So if you're the quarterback running the other team, there's not a ton of detail. The routes are drawn. They kind of give, all right, here's the protection. They kind of use your own verbiage. Here's the protection for the O-line.
Yeah.
We're going to try to throw this to the X. That's Julio Jones or whoever that is. But once the huddle breaks, those guys can really do whatever they want. I mean, you could run around. It's not like a set play because you're just running a simulated play on a piece of notebook paper.
Yeah.
So to see him the last 2 years – almost play like that in real life. I can only imagine what it must have been like when he was running fake plays in practice.
Yeah. I mean, he's been doing the whole, I mean, left-handed throw behind the back, like little stuff like that, just messing around, being a football guy and having fun on the football field. But he takes the game so serious before we even install a single play by Wednesday. Like, I'm talking notebooks filled, chicken scratch, but filled, just absolutely filled of just, I don't even know. I call it the special book.
That's amazing. So you're having this incredible success. I told you I had a trivia question for you.
Okay.
So you are the first tight end in NFL history, 4 consecutive seasons over 1,000 yards.
Okay.
Who were you tied with and then eventually broke? Who was the record holder? Just in case anybody wants to know.
I feel like he's a New York kid. Who is he, man?
I don't know. I mean, it's not important.
In college, I remember he transferred from Notre Dame to Miami.
You're on. You're close.
Dude,
you're
close. Are you kidding me? As soon as you hit that mark, I was like, oh, I got a chance to break that one. I got a chance.
I thought I was going to get 4-2, and then my season broke along with my foot. But I remember texting with you that night, and I mean this genuinely. Like, I was joking around about that, but I remember genuinely, like, that was something that when I got my third year in 2016, 2015, we went to the Super Bowl. Then obviously there was that letdown from losing it. And then that was like a big motivation for me to like hold that level. And there was talk that no one had done three. Yeah. Getting that third one, like, it represented everything that I had tried to have my career emulate, right? Consistency, mm-hmm. be productive, be reliable. I was never the flashiest, but like, just try to be the guy that was there every day. And then I remember when you got your third in 2018, I was like, you know what? Like, I had watched you so much. You were one of the handful of guys that every Thursday I would put on all their targets and just see like what he was doing. And you were, I mean, the reality is you were doing stuff in the passing game that no one else was really doing. Other guys were productive. Mm-hmm. There was production, but they weren't running the routes you were and the shakes, you know, in the red zone, really sitting on that foot and crossing face on those. Most tight ends weren't running routes like you. And I remember I was like, you know what? Barring something crazy happen, Kelsey's going to get four in a row. And I remember texting you the night I knew you were close, and I checked after the game, and I knew you broke it, and I remember texting you, and I was just like, if any guy is going to set that bar, like, I'm just glad it was you, because I just feel like you, production-wise, there's other guys, Kittle, we can talk about all that, but your style of play at tight end, in my eyes, is very unique, and I think it's awesome. I think it fits your team. I think it fits your quarterback, and you've had arguably the greatest 6 or 7 year run that anyone at the positions had. So a little pat to myself, but mostly I was thrilled that you were the guy that got that
for sure. I jokingly say I had my eyes on that thing, but you got to be so fortunate, especially in this game and at this position, a position where you're demanded to be everywhere on the field and do everything. A lot of wear and tear, a lot of mileage at the tight end position. You got to be fortunate to stay on the field to get that opportunity, and on top of that, to have these plays ran for you, or, you know what I mean, called for you. Yep. And that's where it there's so much that goes into it. And I mean, we just mentioned Kittle, Ertz, another guy.
There's so many guys.
And then there's guys that you just wish that, you know what I mean? Oh, why don't they just give them another few targets here and there? Man, the guy's got sauce. Like a Darren Waller, a guy, you know, out in Oakland right now.
Yep.
Another Golden Domer up in Minnesota.
Yeah, Kyle Rudolph. Yep.
I wish he would get more targets, man.
I do too. That offense over the years has been kind of a run offense, under center, nakeds, play action, but he's a really good player. I think, and again, I'm probably biased because this is the era that we're all playing in, but you know, in talking with, I mean, even a lot of the old Hall of Fame legendary guys that I've had a chance to talk to over the last couple of weeks, they were kind of isolated, unique animals in their day, right? There was, they had one or two competitors that they would kind of jockey with for all pro or for yardage leaders. In the last 5 to 8 years, there's been a lot of guys. I mean, you just named them yourself, Kittle, Gronk now being back. Waller jumped on the scene this year. Jimmy Graham, Zach Ertz. And the one thing all these teams have in common is those are all some of the best teams in the league.
You can argue it, man. I mean, you might have jumped it off, but they started naming past Super Bowls, and it's like, man, every single one of them had at least one team. In a lot of instances, there were two teams out there that had great tight ends or tight ends that had a lot of production.
Yep.
And controlling the middle of the field, man, messing and it, being able to tie that in with passing game, run game, just the middle of the field has to be dominated. And I mean, the tight end position it's undefeated, man. It's a mismatch anywhere on the field in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, you just touched on it. You're a natural segue. Your segue ability is off the charts. You must have my notes. obviously this last Super Bowl, of course, you guys were Super Bowl champs. You culminated an unbelievable season with the Super Bowl. Unanimously the best two tight ends in the NFL today match up in that game. It was a huge story, huge storyline all throughout the week. I was part of the pregame coverage, and me and Tony Gonzalez spent 4 days just breaking down you and Kittle and why you guys were so important. We all know that part. The part everybody is dying to know, because I didn't get to experience it. My one Super Bowl appearance was miserable, and we lost, and it was not fun. But you, on the other hand, you got the enjoyment of the after party and the parade and the fun. Like, the game we all watched, what was it like to win that Super Bowl and everything that came from that point?
Man, it's like walking up the tallest water slide and just jumping and just riding that wave, dude. Just hands up and all, just, you know what I mean? It was an absolute blast. To the moment we got down there in Miami, how everyone treated us, the hospitality, to when the anthem goes off, the Chiefs say Chiefs at the end of the national anthem, and you could feel how many Kansas City fans were in the stadium, and it meant so much. It built up the tension, and you wanted to win it that much more, and not that you didn't want to win it like the most already, it just keeps adding to it. And and the built up emotion of coming back in the fourth quarter, the perseverance. I mean, it's been a ride that it's hard for me to explain, but it's been so much fun enjoying this with the guys on the team. The locker room after that Super Bowl is something that I'll always remember, man. I saw a couple of the guys dancing with their kids in the locker room. I'm like, man, these are moments these kids will, yeah, you know what I mean, cherish forever, man. It's awesome.
I'm not gonna lie, I was jealous. I'll be honest. I'm a man of my word, and I'm honest. I was a little bit of hating. I got my one crack at it up till this point. There's always this year, but I got my one crack at it, and we had an all-time season back in 15. I mean, we were 17-1. Man. 15-1 in the regular season. We had beaten the Seahawks, then we had beaten the Cardinals, two of the top teams. And we felt like that was our year, and we had our shot, and we just completely laid an egg. And my sitting in my room that night in my lonely hotel room in Santa Clara, I'm sure, does not come near what you experienced.
Man. But golly.
It was tough. Yeah, it was. But listen, that's why we play, right? I mean, that's the thrills are amazing, and the highs are amazing. But the lows are tough, and whether it's a personal low or a team low, you play this game long enough, you experience it all, man.
You experience it all. God, I remember the year before Pat came in. So Alex's last year, and this one really grinds me talking about Alex Smith, is that we're playing Tennessee, and Tennessee comes into the house, and we go up 21-0. I have a touchdown of like 100 yards in the first quarter or like first half, and we're rolling these dudes. A 2-minute drill at the end of the first half, I get smoked, like knocked out. I felt like Mike Tyson came out of left field and just hammered me. Like I wake up, I'm getting out of I was getting looked at by a machine, an x-ray or something, MRI. I don't know why I missed the MRI. But either way, so I was getting out of the MRI, and I was like, oh shit, what's the score of the game? Because it's the second half and everything. We were up 21, and now we're down three. It's 24-21. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, How did it even get here?
I know.
I uncontrolled, just couldn't control it. I'm sitting there antsy in my seat, just trying to, hope that Alex has this last drive for a touchdown in him.
Those are helpless feelings.
Good old football.
So I'm doing some of the stuff for Fox. You're getting ready to play in the game. I was doing some TV stuff, and me and Tony Gonzalez, obviously, and Gronk, they had us talk about you and Kittle a lot. And, comparing and contrasting. And I know, everyone knows back in 18, you guys kind of jockeyed back and forth for the, all-time receptions title. But the thing I'm more curious about, like, hearing Tony Gonzalez, a Chiefs legend, someone that I'm sure right when you got drafted there, you knew you were kind of falling, and every record you were going for, I mean, there was no more gold standard at the position across the league. But this is a guy that shared your uniform and is in your franchise record books.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how aware of that were you? Because I know when I got drafted to Chicago, Mike Ditka was like a legend. He hung over everything with the franchise, but he played in 1961, right? So, like, it was a long time ago, but he still casted a really large shadow. But Tony was still playing. I mean, he was still playing at a high level just in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Like, how aware were you when you got drafted? Like, I got some the last time they saw a big-time guy at this position, they arguably saw the greatest player who's ever played.
Ever put it on. Dude, when I tell you I had never even thought I would – like, from the get-go, I get drafted. I'm 23. I missed my first year. I'm 24 before I played my first game. So I'm – in my mind, I'm already – Tony got in the league when he was, like, 20 or something. It was something crazy, like, young. It's probably you. You were probably 19 when you got in the league.
19 and a half.
You guys one and done in college. You know how it goes.
Right.
So I'm like – I'm 5 years back. I'm like – at least I'm 3 to 4 years behind schedule already. So I'm like, there's no chance for me to even catch this guy. Let me just be the greatest I could be now. You know what I mean? But if I'm going to wear the same uniform, I got to learn from this dude. I got to figure out, why is he this great? What makes him this great? So I went out and I went straight to the film room my first or second weekend. And I got from 2003 to 2008 or 2009. All Tony Gonzalez film, all tape. And I'll tell you what, it was a pleasure watching Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson as a dual threat. Those were some dudes right there.
Those are good names. Yep.
Those were fun. Shout out to those guys.
Shout out.
So
we're setting an all-time podcast record for shout outs.
I got so many left. I love it.
We're not done yet. Keep going.
But so I'm watching all this film and I'm like, man, this guy's like a machine. Like, he has to be doing this all the time. So when I went to go talk to him and pick his brain about it, everything he was talking about wasn't even what was really on the field. It was all the work that he did in practice, all this. And it was like, as a professional, I had to change how I even looked at being an NFL player. Because I'm thinking NFL player, and I'm just playing football, and now I got the bucks to do it, to have some fun. And I didn't realize what it meant to have a routine, have a consistent way to see yourself progress and to make sure that your fundamentals are correct. That and taking care of the body. Like, he was saying, I mean, there's legends that he only ate fish and didn't do red meat and was this chiseled Gonzalez. Just a beast of a beast, man. But he, just that in the 100 catches before practice. So what I got from TG was that there was so much that he did on the field that he had already been practicing, and he had been through so much of it through practice, just visualizing stuff coming together, that, you know, you have to be this type of professional to have success in this league.
Yeah, and obviously you have one of the best, if not the best guy, to not only learn from across the league, but to share the same franchise history with is pretty unique. So, you know, the guy that you just talked about holds every single tight end record. His production is insane.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer that in all, as selfless and as team-oriented as guys are, and all that being said, I do believe that there is a sense of pride and ego in all great players.
Mm-hmm.
I put myself in that category, and not all the time I'm proud of it. So I'm going to put you on the spot right now. When you take a look, and I'm sure we've all done it. I know I've looked. When you look at where you are and what you've been able to accomplish in 7 years, and you see guys like Tony and Gates and Witten and Shannon, and you start seeing that list, in the back of your mind, are you saying, if I can do this for a few more years, like, I can see myself on that list with the all-time greats? Like, does that motivate you? Like, I know when I got later in my career, I'll be honest, it motivated me. It still does.
Yeah.
Have you taken a second to realize in 7 years how much ground you've made up?
Yeah, no, I feel like, without a doubt. I mean, I've always I mean, heck, I've grown up and told, you know, don't play the game unless you want to be the greatest. You know, that's yeah. just the mentality that my father and the culture that I grew up playing sports around. So that mentality of being the greatest and wanting to be the at least in mentions with the greats, being on that Mount Rushmore, per se, but it's just, I didn't get here trying to chase it.
No.
You know what I mean?
It just kind of happens.
You don't get there with the mentality of, oh man, I got 100 yards this game and 100 yards this game that I can, you know, I can get closer to, you know, getting over 1,000 this year. During the year, it's just so much. You're in the routine of getting excited about the plays, getting excited about, you know, situational football, that it all just comes together for you. And it took probably my third year to really like hone in on that. Like, all right, it's not just every first down, get up and, you know, throw the first down signal. You have to focus and channel your mind in the right direction.
And to that point, there's so much that goes into it, right? And some of it's in your control, some of it's in our control, but there's also a lot of parts about our position that are in other people's control, and being mm-hmm. in the right place, being healthy, having the right, that was my way of just making sure. Cause I went back and looked where you stand, mm-hmm. but the guys that you're up with production wise played as long as I have. You are only going into your eighth season.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Going into eight.
I mean, you have a long way to go here. And I obviously everyone wishes you nothing but health and success, but there's no reason that as long as things continue to go well, and knock on wood, I want to see you chase those records, because I think if anyone has that ability, you might be I don't know if anyone ever thought Gonzalez would be within reach. And you have a long way to go. Don't get me wrong. But if anyone can do it, you've gotten off to, I think, as great a start as anyone could imagine.
Kittles is right now.
Yeah, true.
He's murking those numbers, which I'm so happy for that dude, man. He's such a good dude.
And he's way younger than us.
I mean, way younger. I finally started clicking by my third year in the league. And it's been clicking for him for about 3 years now.
Hopefully he resets the tight end market for all of you guys.
Man, he is about to break.
I hope he makes $1 billion. Let me tell you, man, this was awesome. Well, man, I'll tell you what, every time we've been together, whether it's been at Pro Bowls or doing one chip challenges, this conversation, it's been a text, I got a ton of respect for you, man. You're fun to watch. You're a great dude. I've always enjoyed being around you, watching you, texting with you, chatting with you, and for you to come on and be a part of this story, the story of the evolution of the tight end, who you've now, you know, brought it to a level that I don't know anyone really ever could have imagined, has been really cool for me. And I hope you enjoyed it. And I think everyone's going to really enjoy having your perspective as we kind of lay out this history of the position.
Definitely, man. I appreciate you doing this, man. Getting everybody a little educated on the tight end world, man. It's a tight knit family, baby. You're always one of the greatest in my mind, man.
Thanks,
bro. Always, forever.
I appreciate it, buddy. It's good talking to you. Stay safe. And I'm sure we'll cross paths this season.
All right, G-Rick.
See you, buddy. So as we've entered this modern NFL landscape, the personalities of these tight ends have really come out. And Travis Kelce's got to be at the top of that list. He's a fun guy. He loves life. He loves to live it to its fullest. And as good of a player he is, he's as fun and as energetic and as good of a guy. He's somebody I've enjoyed getting to know over the years as our careers have overlapped. I've loved watching him from afar, and that was as fun a conversation as we've had during this entire series. If you've enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and tell your friends. Next episode, I'll be talking to George Kittle, so be sure to listen in. TE1 is a Blue Wire podcast.